In the instructions this morning, I'd like to talk about the parami of wisdom. And this also links in with what we call mindfulness of dhammas. Mindfulness of dhammas. We've explored all kinds of qualities over the course of the retreat. And we've been exploring all of these different paramis. And there's another teaching called the seven awakening factors. And these are the factors that really bring into being a sense of liberating wisdom. And obviously that would be another retreat to go through all of those. But as you can see, we've really touched on many of these in this retreat. Quality of mindfulness, investigation, energy, joy, tranquility, concentration, and equanimity. So as we've been exploring, these teachings overlap and essentially explore the same theme from different angles. One of those qualities that I just mentioned that I'd like to explore a little bit this morning is this quality of investigation. So we've been spending time calming, we've been spending time collecting, and we've been opening up our awareness to include more and more aspects of experience. But part of practice too is to see clearly into that, to investigate that, to explore. And specifically to explore where we get stuck, where we get confused, where we struggle, and where we can find peace, freedom, and ease. So the four truths, the four noble truths, are really a tool of investigation. They're something that we can really bring in to our lives, bring into our practice. And this phrase, mindfulness of dhammas, actually has a kind of double meaning, because that word dhamma means basically everything, all aspects of experience. What we see, hear, taste, touch, smell, what's happening in our minds. All of experience is included. But it also means using the teachings. Yeah. So we can see this aspect of mindfulness is specifically using the framework of the teachings to investigate all aspects of our experience. So when we think of the truth of struggle and suffering, the origin of that struggle, and possibility of the end, the cessation, and the path. This is not a theory or a kind of abstract belief system. It's a tool for investigation. A tool for investigation. So when we're practicing, when we're doing the formal practice, one thing that's really helpful, let's say there's a pain in the knee, or there's a difficult memory from the past, or there's a story that feels very stuck, we can reflect, this is dukkha. This is the first truth, the first noble truth. This is suffering, this is unsatisfactoriness. Yeah. So you see how we're actually using the teaching, using the framework of the teaching, bringing it directly in contact with our experience. So we're not just thinking, here's a pain in the knee, how do I get rid of it? Or here's a painful memory, how do I get rid of it? But here's a teaching on the first truth. How do I understand it? What's it showing me? What's it teaching me? And this truth of the origin of suffering being that sense of craving, wanting this, that aversion, not wanting that. Also called an unquenchable thirst. I think that word unquenchable really captures what tanha, craving, is all about. So again, if we get a feel for that teaching, it's so freeing. It's a real radical change of direction. So we begin to let go of the power of those stories that says the reason I'm struggling is because I need more of this or less of that, or something else, or somewhere else, or someone else. And we turn much more towards this response, this way life is being met. Is there a pushing away? Is there a grasping? Is there a clinging? And we find ways to ease. And just as the first truth is to be understood, suffering is to be understood, the second truth is to be let go. So we begin to know the origin of suffering as that unquenchable thirst, that craving, and we begin to explore the pathways of letting go. And the third truth, the cessation of suffering, Nibbana. One of the potential drawbacks, you could say, about thinking about Nibbana is that we make it so far away for somewhere, someone else, or in some future lifetime, or for someone who's much more developed and perfect and spiritual than I could ever possibly be. So it becomes a word that almost means, could mean nothing to us. You know, this person sitting here breathing with the mind doing what it does. You know, what does Nibbana mean to us? And one thing to really bring that teaching into our practice is to notice the moments of ease that we have. And we don't have to build these up into some, you know, elaborate attainment or anything like that, but just what we might see as relatively ordinary moments of ease and peace and stillness. Those moments when that craving mind subsides. One of my sixth form students said to me once, when we were exploring the nature of happiness, she said, well, I don't really know what makes me happy, but sometimes I'm just sitting on the bus and I don't want anything and I'm not particularly worried about anything and I don't need anything and I just feel there's enough. And I just thought it was wonderful that this girl, this 16-year-old girl, could sort of sense that. A possibility of ease, possibility of stillness. So really noticing in our own lives when we feel those moments. Whether it feels a very profound experience of peace or just a taste, just noticing that. This is the dissolution of struggle. This is stillness, this is peace. And so too in our practice we can use this teaching on the path. And one way of exploring the path is in terms of ethics, meditation, wisdom, right? Ethical restraint, meditative calm, liberating insight, sila, samadhi, punya. And again too, this can be an investigation in our experience. So notice what it's like if you find that you've, you know, I don't know, perhaps said something that you regret, or a memory from the past of something kind of perhaps unwholesome, an unwholesome action comes up. Just knowing the unpleasantness of that memory, or the way that such memories can bring forth a kind of agitation. It's very important for our practice. And we begin to see clearly the effect of our ethical lives on the stillness and stability of our minds. And of course, practicing that meditative calm, we've been doing that all week, to still and collect and gather, noticing how that enables us to see more clearly. And this quality of investigation can very directly explore the wisdom aspects of the teaching, the impermanence and change we've been exploring, thoughts, feelings, sensations, sounds, all arising and passing, emotions and mind states arising and passing. Can you explore that sense of unreliability I was talking about yesterday? You can feel, when we become sensitive, we can feel the struggle that's there when we pin too much on something that simply can't deliver what we're asking of it, when we look to something conditioned as an ultimate refuge. And so too, exploring the teaching on not-self. The feelings, emotions, memories, plans, thoughts and patterns that all pass through us, can they really be our true identity? Are they really who we are? And having that as a question, as an exploration, to help bring this investigative quality into our practice.